Hello and welcome to the show that, frankly, would welcome a bit of lavish Chinese investment. This week we plunge into the Football League so deep we'll send your butt to sleep. We're talking Chesterfield, of course, 92nd in the Football League and sinking fast. First it was Clarence Seedorf, then it was Paul Scholes, now it's Matt Stanger who's been checking out Oldham. Find out what happened to him at Boundary Park. And in a devilish flip of the running order that marks us out as the iconoclastic rogues that we are, we'll end the show at the very top of the Football League, keeping you all hungry like the, well, you know. It's all in the Totally Football League Show. Okay, welcome then to the studios of Jazz FM for the Totally Football League Show, the second Totally Football League Show, which will be rendered redundant in a matter of hours by a midweek programme of fixtures. So no pressure to keep yourself out of trouble. We are joined, as always, by the set-piece editing Blackburn Rovers supporting Matt Stanger. Matt!
Good morning, Ian.
You all right?
Yeah, I was all right until you sent me to Oldham versus Blackburn at the weekend.
Gregor Robertson is here. Delighted to have you here. Welcome to the studio.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm not sure how to introduce you because as a footballer, you started at Nottingham Forest, went to Rotherham, you did five seasons at Chesterfield, one at Crewe, two at Northampton, you ended in the conference with Grimsby.
That's right.
But you also went from the dressing room to the lecture hall, did a degree in professional sports writing at Staffordshire University, did work experience at the Nottingham Post, and now you write one of the best columns in the piles of Monday broadsheet content, detailing your Odyssean voyages through British football.
That sounds very generous, but thank you.
Two fine careers already. When you went to university, what was that like as a professional footballer? Because university, generally speaking, is 18-year-olds just off their tits.
Yeah, I didn't have any of that, I'm afraid. It was a course that was mainly kind of made up of footballers as well. So,
oh, really?
The PFA runs it in conjunction with Staffordshire University.
Anyone else on your course that we know?
Yeah, there was George Friend, Neil Mellor, Clark Carlisle was the year before us. There's quite a few players that have gone on to do some stuff in the media. So,
what do you do on the course? What's the kind of vocational stuff?
You're supposed to cover everything. It's professional sports writing and broadcasting, and so you cover a bit of everything. And you've got to find some time outside of your footballing career to go in and get some work experience somewhere. So every day off, I was nipping into the Nottingham Post near me and spending a day making the teas and coffees, really. So
was it a bit weird with all the journalists? Because you'd be like, ah, you're him, are you? You're the one who gave me that 4 out of 10.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't worry about that because I think most people gave me a 4 out of 10. So
that's more than we get for this pod some days. Without further ado, let's go to League Two. It's time for the roundup. Hit the music, producer Ben. There were new leaders in every division this weekend, and it's Notts County who sit at the top of the pile in League Two after their 2-1 win over Barnet. Exeter, who drew away at Wickham, were reported to be fortunate with that. They're level on points in second, but trailing on goal difference. And Harry Redknapp's influence might be coming to bear down at Yeovil. He's been brought in as Darren Way's advisor, and they've only gone and won a game, beating Crewe 2-0. They rise to 17th.
Well-worked goal from Sean McConville gave Accrington a 1-0 win over Coventry to keep them within a point of the automatic promotion places. And Chesterfield lost 2-0 at home to fellow strugglers Morecambe to make it 10 games without a win in League Two. More on that later. Carlisle edged out Colchester 1-0 thanks to a goal from substitute Jamie Devitt.
Hey, we mentioned last week that Luton were looking like the wheat to this division's chaff, and for the second time this season they went goal crazy, putting 7 past poor old Stevenage. Mansfield's little run of form ended abruptly this weekend. They were beaten 3-1 at home by Swindon. And congratulations to Port Vale's new boss, Neil Aspin, who celebrates his first win, a 3-1 victory over Cheltenham, and Vale are out of the drop zone.
Forest Green boss Mark Cooper said it was soul-destroying to watch experienced players making basic errors as Rovers lost 4-0 at home to Newport, while Sam Jones missed a penalty as Grimsby were held to a 0-0 draw by Harry Cules Crawley, TM, at Blundell Park. And it was 0-0 just down the road in Lincoln too, as the Imps failed to find a way past Cambridge United.
Lovely stuff. So Chesterfield, Gregor, you were there for 5 years, so you'll know all this already. They're 149 years old. They entered the Football League in 1921 as one of the inaugural Third Division North gang. They've never played in the top flight and haven't been in the second flight since they were relegated in 1951. Not that they haven't had some incredible moments, of course. Who could forget the 1997 FA Cup run that took them all the way to the semi-finals? And indeed a semi-final replay, because of a bit of officiating that still rankles, and understandably so. They left their old home as Saltergate in 2010, and they disproved the new stadium curse theory by winning promotion the following season at what is now known as the Pro Act Stadium. And 15 years after that Wembley frustration against Middlesbrough, they made new memories, winning the Johnston's Paint Trophy in 2012. And then they were relegated back down to the basement the following season. But they came back to League One in 2014 under Paul Cook, but it's all gone pear-shaped since then. Cook left for Portsmouth, Dean Saunders proved an inadequate replacement, as did Danny Wilson and Gary Caldwell. But by this point, with serious financial worries mounting, form was the least of their concerns. They finished 24th in League One last season, they're 24th in League Two this season. Gregor, you left, it all went wrong. What's happened?
Well, they had another high after I left. They had the second promotion. But no, I mean, it's a club I had a great time at. I really enjoyed my time there. It's a good football club. But yes, it has been. There's been a bit of a bad atmosphere there for quite some time now. Things going on seems behind the scenes with the ownership. I think the owner wants out, really.
But yeah, just to come on that, Dave Allen, it was. He resigned as chairman and director in November 2016 after he claimed he suggested to the other shareholders that they all write off the interest on their loans to the club until the club could actually afford to pay it, and they didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I don't think he's really been back since that day. He's washed his hands with it. So, and the club's has run up a fair bit of debt as well. But yeah, I mean, I think still on the pitch, it's been hugely disappointing in terms of they've still got a reasonable budget for that division. Changed a lot of players in the summer. I think 16 new players came in, and it's just been disastrous this season for them.
Yeah, they have a new CEO there, Michael Dumford, who has plenty of experience. He's been in similar roles at Everton, Birmingham, Plymouth, Derby, Crawley. He recently announced dates for surgeries where the fans could discuss their concerns with him. And he said, "I'm happy to discuss anything connected with the football club other than the playing side. That is one line I'm not crossing." And no bloody wonder. They're not looking good, are they?
No, they're looking like they're in trouble. But, I mean, Jack Lester's obviously come in recently, and he's someone who's got a huge amount of credit with supporters and with that football club. He's an absolute legend there.
Yes, he's scored so many goals there, they retired his number 14 shirt. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was one of those kind of... It was like a Stevie Gerrard farewell at Chesterfield, a Chesterfield version of that. There was the guard of honour, the kind of lap of honour, all of that stuff.
You played with him, so you know him very well.
Yeah, we shared the lift up from Nottingham for 5 years. And yeah, he's someone I know well. I think since he went to Nottingham Forest, he's become a very good coach. He's got built a good reputation, and I think he's obviously what he's got to work with is what he has until January. But he's really looking forward to trying to make the most of that bunch on the training field, because that's what he enjoys most. I think he's a very hands-on coach.
Matt, we both watched the 2-0 defeat at home to Morecambe. What has he got to work with on the pitch? Is there anything good there?
Well, I don't often call these things correctly, Ian, but I don't think they're going straight back up this season. they played okay actually against Morecambe. I thought they were a little bit unlucky to not get a draw. They defended terribly, though, the two goals. Oh. The free kick was a stinker. And then the second one, just a high ball into the box, midfielder not tracking his runner easily.
Well, no one was tracking anything. The greatest thing about the second goal, and it was the ball came down with snow on it, and there were no Chesterfield players anywhere near it. And as it got bundled inevitably into the net, you could hear a voice in the stadium going, "Oh, come on!" It was a dreadful, dreadful goal. But I'm like Matt, I thought they were... There were clear signs of improvement there. There were a few players there. Andy Kellett, who you might remember as getting an unlikely loan move to Manchester United, a 23-year-old left-back, he looked interesting.
Yeah, he did. He played fairly well. And Lewis Reed as well, midfielder they've got on loan from Sheffield United. I thought he kept the ball pretty well in the centre. And they maintained possession fairly well. I thought they controlled a lot of the play, but they perhaps lacked a bit of pace to get beyond the Morecambe back line second half and really create chances. And they had a couple of efforts from distance. I think Robbie Weir hit the post in the first half with a great strike, and Christian Dennis as well had a good shot saved by Barry Rush in the first half. But they definitely need some more cutting edge, and I think that's what Jack Lester, former striker, will obviously be looking for.
Yeah, Barry Rush, the proving a different immutable law of the X there with a man of the match performance. What do you think, Gregor, of their team? Who stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lad on loan from Sheffield United was a tidy little player. He looked quite good. And
Reed.
Yeah, Robbie Weir's experienced. He's been around. He's played at a high level too, and I think he's got good experience, and they'll need to call on that. Evett at the back is a kind of old warhorse now, and he's
the dreadnought.
They'll need his experience too. Yeah, but I agree completely that the thing they lack most is pace, and especially up front, they've got no one who can stretch the play at all.
Do you think Jack could be pulling his boots on again?
I think the fans would like that, you know. But I think that's their biggest worry. Jack can get them fitter, he can make them more organised, but he can't genetically modify them anybody and get them into super athletes.
Well, he said something along those lines earlier this week. He said you can't just say work harder at a better intensity unless it's in your legs. So he started a weights program there. He says just beginning, it'll make the players a little stronger. And he's already starting to see a little bit of progress. But you've been in a number of dressing rooms over the years. How easy is it to turn it around when morale is apparently rock bottom?
It's not. It's pretty much as simple as that. But I knew that's the job of the new manager, to come in and galvanise things and try and give people a bit of confidence. And Jack's a very positive, outgoing, likeable guy. He's full of energy, and I know that everyone who played for him at Forest in the academy, they really really liked playing for him, and he's obviously got a status there as well. So he's going to have the authority, and like I say, he's got a lot of energy, and I think he will galvanise that team.
Now, Guy Branston was caretaker manager there before Jack arrived. He's got a very interesting column in the Football League paper. That's £1.50, the Football League paper. Buy it, it's really good. He wasn't that keen on Jack getting the job. He said, I personally believe we need a different sort of fit. It's no detriment to Jack, but that's the kind of honest person I am. I think you need the fit of a person with a proven track record to start getting a group of wins together instantly. I think young managers coming into this job won't have time. We ain't got time. He's got to win now, and you need a manager that fits that. Guys left the club by mutual agreement now, which is entirely understandable. Is that a worry, though, that you've got a first-time rookie manager coming into what is essentially a large building on fire?
You could look at it that way, but I think, like I say, I think the attributes that Jack brings to that is kind of a bit of dynamism, a bit of energy, and it's all new to him, obviously, the stresses and strains of professional football rather than working in an academy scene. But he's going to give everything he's got, and like I say, he's got so much in the bank with the supporters and stuff. I was at the first game against Cheltenham, and just kind of until the game started, at least there was a big lift around the place. You know, when he walked out the tunnel, the fans were delighted to have him back, and it was just unfortunate that nothing much happened on the pitch that changed.
Well, as I say, I thought there were a few green shoots there, so let's all clamber off the fence. Will Chesterfield go into non-league at the end of the season? Matt?
I think they've probably got enough to survive, and if Leicester can give them that bounce after a few games, it's not started brilliantly, but this time yet, and he will have the fans behind him, and he might have that bit of patience, really, to put a run of results together.
Gregor?
No, I think they'll survive. I think he'll get some backing as well in January. They know that they've got to change things around in terms of some of the playing staff there. But I think a bit of time in the training ground, Jack will turn things around. I've got to say that, though.
I'll back you all. You're in Chesterfield for a long time. Do you know why the spire of the Chesterfield Cathedral is twisted as it is? 'cause it's very distinctive twist in that spire. Very famous.
I should be really wrong here, and I hope not, but is there not like something that the devil sat in it? Or?
That is exactly, that is exactly why. The local legend has it that the devil was causing mischief in Chesterfield, and he seated himself upon the spire and wrapped his tail around it. But the people of the town rang the church bells, and the devil, frightened by the clamour, tried to jump away with his tail still wound around the steeple, causing it to twist. It's either that or the contraction of the lead on the roof, which faces the south side where the sun is. You make your own decision. I'm not a scientist. Tonight, Chesterfield play away at Harry Kuehl's Crawley TM. If you want to go to Chesterfield, the nearest train station is Chesterfield, but the ground's a good 30-minute walk away. There's a shuttle bus, though, before and after the game, and it only costs a quid. You can drive. It's not far from the M1, just down the A617, but parking is not great. It's permit holders only at the ground, and there is a bit of street parking, and it's listed on the club site, but get there early for that. We want to encourage people to go to games, but tickets are a bit pricey. £20 to £24, plus £2 for Category A games. Though the ominously entitled juvenile tickets, under 16s, are between £9 and £11, which is far more reasonable. That's Chesterfield. Good luck to them. After this, good luck to Matt and to Gregor. It's a fan league. Listeners, you like stats, and so do I. So have a bang on this one. 81% of men who try the Cornerstone Razor don't go back to their old one. I know. Find out more and get £10 off your first order and free delivery too at cornerstone.co.uk/totally. Right, it's time to play the Fan League. Gregor, are you familiar with the Fan League?
I am, yes.
Of course you are. It's basically like the football pools, isn't it, Matt?
Yes.
Yeah, you get your slip through the app, which you find on the App Store by typing in Fan League. There are 13 games. All you have to do is predict home win, away win, or draw. And the more you get right, the more money you win. You need to get 10 from 13 to start winning cash, something I haven't yet managed. We have five championship fixtures on the slip, and the first up is Bristol City Leeds. Matt, Bristol City, they wobbled but this weekend, just drawing at home to Burton, but not as hard as Leeds wobbled.
No, and we predicted that Leeds would beat Reading at home after
Reading's
struggle so far. But I think Bristol City will have enough here again. They've been scoring lots of goals this season. I watched them against Derby when they thrashed Derby, and they played the ball around brilliantly and, yeah, continuing their form.
Gregor, what do you think?
I'll go with Bristol City as well. I think they seem to turn it on in the big games, and they're in good form. They had a little blip the other night, but Leeds seem to be going through a bit of a sticky patch now. It's going to be a big test for them, so I'm going with Bristol City. Yeah.
I'm really worried about Leeds, but I was encouraged by Pontus Janssen on his Instagram this week, who quite pleasingly blamed himself for being a word that I can't use on this podcast without getting the little E explicit symbol.
You're on Instagram?
No, I read it in the papers. Next up is Bolton, who won a game, finally. And they're against QPR, who could only draw with Sunderland. So is this two from two, Matt?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Really?
Usually this is how it works, isn't it? You get a bit of confidence. And, you know, Bolton, when we saw them against Brentford in that first 20 minutes, they actually looked like a side then. Obviously, it didn't end so well, losing 3-0. But, yeah, I can see them actually, you know, continuing to lift up a little bit.
Gregor.
I'm going to go with you again. I think that'll give Bolton a huge lift. Obviously, it's been a horrendous start for them, but they looked like they played really well at the weekend, and I think that's going to give them a boost for the rest of the season.
There seemed to be a vote of confidence for Ian Holloway on Twitter last night from Tony Fernandez, unless I was misreading things completely. I think he's still well-loved there, but he does need to get some wins together, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I think they need to start scoring more goals as well. It's been a bit of an issue recently.
Okay. Villa, we'll talk a little bit more about later. Beaten by Wolves, and really beaten by Wolves. And they have Fulham, who still can't quite get their season going, Matt.
Yeah, Fulham were perhaps a bit fortunate to come from behind against Preston at the weekend. So I could see Villa getting back on track, really, in this one.
Gregor?
I think Fulham are one of the best sides in the Championship, in fact, the way they play. They had a lot of chances. They had a lot of pressure in that game against Preston at the weekend. And I think Aston Villa, they're really kind of struggling a bit with the pressure. A lot of the players are there. So they've obviously had an upturn in form, but I still think I'm going to go for Fulham on that one.
Tom Kearney's coming back, isn't he? He's been out for a little bit, but he's fit again. I don't know, I'm still going for a draw on this one. Millwall, against Birmingham. Millwall lost at the weekend. Birmingham did not. First game under Steve Cotterill, and they won it. Matt, this will be a tight one, won't it?
Yeah, I think it will. Birmingham did pretty well at the weekend, obviously winning Friday night, and Cotterill's first match after he dodged that bullet against Hull the other week. So I can see this being tight, probably 1-1 draw.
Gregor?
Yeah, I'm going for a draw. Cotterill's obviously got a great reaction the other weekend. And Millwall were very unlucky the weekend, extremely unlucky not to get something from that game. Yeah, I think it'll be tight. I'm going for a draw.
You must have played away at Millwall a few times. What's it like?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, lovely folk down there.
Always friendly and welcoming.
Yeah, I've heard some nice things from the site. It's good being a left back and being close to them there. It's really nice.
Is it one of the most foreboding places to go, or are there worse?
It has been. I mean, there's different levels. If you go to Accrington Stanley and the guys are leaning over, it can nearly touch you, then that's got its own pressures too. But there is some choice words down at Millwall occasionally, yeah.
The big one of the weekend, though, Ipswich-Norwich. Ipswich, that early burst of form has worn off now. Norwich may be finding their feet now under Daniel Farke. Matt?
Yeah, Norwich got a last-minute equaliser at the weekend, and they really pushed for that, and that's 7 games unbeaten, I think, for them. So I can see them continuing their form, really. I mean, Ipswich haven't drawn a game yet, so we can't really go for draw on this one. So I'm going for a Norwich victory.
Gregor, the only person who's done better with an international break than Daniel Farke is Roy Hodgson. You were at Norwich at the weekend. What did you make of him?
I think you can tell that his work on the training ground is really improving them, and he's got a really good reputation as a coach. And I think in the last international break, he's kind of solved their defensive issues. They got 5 clean sheets in a trot after conceding 4 against I think it was Millwall, 4 against Villa. They're struggling for goals at home, but they're doing a bit better away from them. So I think it could be an Norwich win there. They play some nice football, just that lacking a little bit of cutting edge. They kind of had Cameron Jerome up front on his own, who was a bit statuesque at the weekend. And Oliveira coming back now, that's a big thing for them. He seems to get goals, so I'm going for an away win there.
What was the atmosphere like at Carrow Road? Is it generally supportive?
Yeah, I mean, the first half an hour, they played really well, and it was a bit... They do have great expectations down there. Mm. You know, they're not... I was there when Alex Neil was kind of fizzling out towards the end of last season, and it was...
It takes a while to make him turn, but when they turn,
I mean, yeah, they did. He knew about it. But I think he's still getting... They are supporting him, but they're still to be convinced by how patient his play is. It's a little bit similar to what's going on at Reading with Stam down there. Very patient play, and they want attack, a lot of them, so they're taking some convincing, I think.
Matt?
Yeah, I think they were expecting it to be a bit similar to Wagner's revolution at Huddersfield, weren't they? And you know, all energy in the final third, but it's a bit more patient than that. But in James Maddison, they've got real talent there, and you know, he's someone that could definitely fire them to the playoffs this season.
He was excellent, yeah. I mean, kind of finds little pockets of space, and he's very classy, nice, good balance.
There were a lot of big clubs after him when he left Coventry, weren't there?
Yeah, he was linked with a lot of Premier League clubs, and obviously there seems to be a bit of a mystery as to why it's taken him so long to play there. He was sent on loan to Aberdeen,
yeah.
Then he came back and he didn't play again until I think it was April. He scored in his debut. This season he's obviously getting a run, and he's shown what he can do, and he's a real talent, yeah.
All right, that's the Fan League. You find it on the App Store under Fan League. And if you want to link up with us, if you search for me, it's Ian McIntosh, and we'll invite you to join the Totally Football League. After the break, League One. Hey, remember, we wait until the very last minute before we decide what clubs we're looking at. So if you want to help us make that decision, get in touch with us. We are on Twitter, at The Totally Show, and Facebook, at The Totally Football Show. Exact same links as for the main show. Get in touch, tell us your club stories, and if we're suitably impressed, we'll send Matt. Now, League One. The curse of the Totally Football League show strikes again, this time on Shrewsbury. We spend 15 minutes blowing smoke up their bums on the Tuesday, and they come within 12 minutes of defeat at bottom club Plymouth on the Saturday. They drew 1-1 in the end, but they're off the top because Wigan won again, 3-0 against... Well, tragically, we just don't know who they won against.
Southend.
I Hate Your Face. There was a shock for early pace setters Peterborough this weekend as they lost 1-0 at home to Gillingham, though given Gillingham's form, I suspect that they were just as shocked as anyone else with that result. Matt.
Oxford picked up a third successive victory in League One, beating Bristol Rovers 1-0 to jump into the playoff spots, while Bury fought back from going 1-0 down inside the first 10 minutes to beat high-flying Bradford 3-1. And Charlton beat Doncaster 1-0, courtesy of Tarik Fosu-Henry's fifth goal in three matches.
If Rotherham's away form matched their home form, they'd be promotion favourites by now. They beat Scunthorpe 2-0 on Saturday, their 20th and 21st goals at home this season, the best in the league by miles. They've only scored three away. Portsmouth, remember Portsmouth, they're slowly clawing their way back to the playoffs. Two goals from Oliver Hawkins gave them a 2-0 win over MK Dons. And elsewhere, draw specialists Walsall drew with Blackpool. That's their fourth draw in five games.
Devante Cole, son of Andy, rescued a 2-2 draw for 10-man Fleetwood at home to Rochdale, who remained perilously close to the drop zone. While Northampton's slide continued with a 1-0 defeat at home to Wimbledon, it's now six games without a win or a goal for Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's side. And Oldham beat Blackburn 1-0. We don't need to say anything more about that.
Indeed we don't. In fact, Jim on Twitter, at Hangress, has been in touch. He said, he's an Oldham fan. He said, we've won four on the spin. Why do you have to talk about us? The curse, the legend of the curse is spreading quickly. But Oldham, once known as Pine Villa, sounds like a kind of toilet freshener. I quite like it. They nearly won the league in the 1914-15 season, missing out by a single point to Everton and then denied a chance to go one better the following year by the industrialised slaughter of the young men of Western Europe. They dropped out the top flight in 1923. They didn't come back until 1991 under Joe Royle. And, oh, Joe Royle. He took over in 82, nearly went up to the First Division in 87, lost in the Rumbelows Cup final to Nottingham Forest, and then finally burst back into the top flight in 1991. Like Chesterfield, Oldham were denied a place in the FA Cup final after a brutal semi-final replay against Manchester United in this case. They were relegated shortly afterwards. They never came back and Joe Royle left for Everton. Joe Royle and his predecessor, Jimmy Fritzl, they managed Oldham for 24 years between them. But in the 24 years since, another 24 managers have come and gone. And Matt will testify, I found that out for myself in my Rothmans yearbook. Days. Literally days before Martin Samuel used it as his opening paragraph in the Mail. I think he's bugged our office. So, Oldham, the most deprived town in England, Ben tells me. Something reflected in the finances of the club. Matt, it's another club in the lower leagues that's got its books in a mess.
Well, they haven't been deprived of 3 points lately.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, they're having a few issues behind the scenes with the financial problems. They actually failed to pay the players on time in September, and it's not the first time it's happened. So I think they're about 11 days late there with the salaries. But they are looking at bringing in new investment. Abdelah Lemsagan is trying to arrange a takeover at the moment. Moroccan businessman slash football agent. And he brought in a few players for the club in the summer, some which have done well, some which haven't really settled yet so far. They're in a due diligence process that's been going on for about 6 weeks now, and Simon Corney actually met with the EFL last week to update them on that. And it looks like a deal could happen in the near future. Richie Welland is still in charge as interim manager, and I imagine that the new man wants to get into the club to make his own decision on the next permanent boss there.
Gregor, have you come across Richie Welland in your career?
Yes, I've played against him a few times when he was at Doncaster, I think, and he was a very good player, excellent midfielder. Obviously, he's taken to life there like a duck to water. And it was very surprising to see what happened with John Sheridan. I mean, I went there last season when it was the Chesarection Mark II. It was just very surprising. It seemed to be a club that he was at home at. And obviously, had a chance to bring in his own players during the summer, but it just didn't happen for him. So it's great to see Richie Wellens starting so well, though.
Yeah, Richie Wellens, a man who learnt his trade under Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United, much like the man who appears to be his rival for the job, Paul Scholes. Matt, what's happening here?
Well, I think Scholes has actually distanced himself from the position now.
Has he?
Yeah, it's probably not a great ideal first job to go in without a pre-season as well, and to try and lift Oldham's fortunes, especially on the back of Wellens doing so well. Do you want to be the guy who follows the guy who won 4 out of 4 in his caretaker spell? So I also think that there's going to be a bit of a delay while he waits to get investment in. That was the talk around Seedorf as well. It was said that that would require more money coming into the club, I guess, to be able to pay his wages and to bring in new players to go with that. So I don't think Scholes is going to happen. And I think Wellens gave an interview after the game at the weekend, and he said he was told he was a massive outsider by Simon Cornie when he first took the caretaker role. And he's clearly given Simon Cornie a headache, though, at the moment, because the fans want him. The fans were singing Richie Wellens' Blue and White Army. And the way he changed the team in the second half was brilliant. At half time, I felt that Oldham perhaps gave Rovers a bit too much respect in the first half. But after the break, they came out and they just really took the game to them and fully deserved the victory.
You were there, yeah. The atmosphere was great, wasn't it? I really feel like the fans getting behind the team on the pitch.
It was buzzing, considering that there'd been a bit of a break as well with the international break. Oldham didn't play. I think their game against Bury was postponed. So they were behind the team from the off. The team played pretty well in the first half. They created a couple of chances, but really the best chances fell to Rovers. Elliot Bennett took one round the goalkeeper. Johnny Placide, the Haitian number one, in the nets for Oldham there, who played brilliantly, I have to say.
He's only 5'11".
Yeah, he didn't look the biggest, but he was actually a France under 21 international as well. He has quite a lot of appearances in League One over there. Ligue 1, rather than League One. And he played well, but Rovers looked the better side in the first half. You could tell that Blackburn have the more technically gifted players, but Oldham just had the application and the way they approached that second half. They were really in our face. Dan Gardner, centre midfielder, I think he was a winger actually early in his career, but he was playing centre midfield in that second half. He switched with Jack Byrne, who kind of took a bit more of a free role in the second half and was linking up nicely between the midfield and attack. But Gardner was all over the pitch, closing down players, putting them under pressure so he couldn't play any balls out. Byrne ran the show. He was actually on loan at Blackburn for a short period there at the start of last season, never really was given a chance at Blackburn, moved to Wigan, and now he's on loan at Oldham, and he was excellent. He fired a shot just wide, created plenty of other chances for teammates.
Yeah, I thought Byrne was the best player on the pitch. He's a former Manchester City kid. He actually played a season in the Eredivisie for Cambuur. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but it's got a lot of U's in it. Cambuur. He's absolutely excellent. Dan Gardner, who you mentioned, the interesting backstory in Dan Gardner, he was doing a panel beating course at Manchester College and playing for the college team when he was spotted by Celtic scouts, apparently.
Really?
Did you know that? Yeah. According to Wikipedia. So if that turns out to be wrong, I apologise profusely. He didn't quite make the grade, went back to non-league, and then he got spotted again, this time by Chesterfield.
That was after my time there, but I thought that was the guy. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I was confused by the panel beating thing. But no,
God,
he's a good
that
player.
That turns out not to be true. That's...
He's a good player. He's got a bit of an edge to him, and he works hard, and he's
nice
talent,
range of passing too. Yeah. There is someone that you did play with there at Chesterfield, Craig Davis, who hit 23 for Chesterfield in 2011. Another former Man City kid, though he's 31 now.
Yeah, I mean he's. He'll get goals at that level, definitely. He's a big, big unit and aggressive. He was fantastic that year that we got promoted. He scored a bucket of goals, like you say. It was him and Jack up front, and that was a great season. I think he's going to be a big player for them. Obviously, with Doyle as well up front, that's two good strikers for that level. And it's been
another
surprising.
Former Chesterfield hotshot there. He got 21 in 2015.
That's two good players for that level, and I think they're going to be huge for them.
So what were they doing down there in the first place? They look a really decent team.
It's very hard to put your finger on, but the thing I know about John Sheridan is he needs certain type of character in the changing room. He does not sugarcoat it. if he thinks something's going wrong, he will tell you.
Well, I mean, they do have a lot of former Premier League academy kids. Is that, do you think?
Potentially. I mean,
have you seen that in your career that the young players have come from a kind of gilded background and then been thrust into the realities of lower league football?
Well, yeah, it's an eye opener too. I mean, we had. When John Sheridan was at Chesterfield, we had a few players that came in. There was a guy, Donald McDermott, who was from Man City, and he was a great player. But if he had an off day, John Sheridan would let him know about it. He'd let anyone know about it. He can be a tough taskmaster. So that's potentially something that could have been an issue. And if things start to unravel a bit, then it can be hard to.
A teacup still thrown about?
No, I think there's kind of. More violence comes out of his mouth, in fact. Yeah, I really enjoy playing for him. I think he's a good manager. He's honest. That's the first thing anyone looks for. And and he enjoyed training, he enjoyed playing for him. He just had to be able to take his harsh words sometimes on a Saturday.
Matt, you spoke to Richie Wellens a couple of weeks ago. What did you make of him as a person? Is there violence coming out of his mouth?
No, well, he knows exactly how he wants the team to play. And I think it's one thing having that vision, and it's another thing being able to bring it about on the pitch. And that was probably the most impressive thing at the weekend, was the fact that he talked about how they wanted to play a pressing game, pass the ball around, pass it out from the back. And I thought, okay, well, this is a real test of this. They're playing against Blackburn here, who are, you know, one of the strongest sides of the division. Well, they should be. And and they did that. They passed it out from the back. There was a great moment, actually, where in the second half, Johnny Placide was being closed down by Danny Graham, and he just took an extra touch, so Graham ran straight past him, and all the crowd were loving that. And yeah, they passed it out nicely. But they pressed. They really got in Rovers' faces, and you can see that the players are really responding to Wellens' methods.
I mean, if that was my club, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Richie Wellens gets a job. Gregor?
Yeah, I mean, especially, I think there's no rush. They've got to, until the takeover happens, he would want to know that they want him as well, the new owners. So I think just let him continue what he's doing.
He said some very diplomatic things about Paul Scholes and Clarence Seedorf. Clearly a man with a long-term view, yes, of staying there. Though, to be honest, if he keeps winning games, they've got a tough one away at Bradford tonight, he can pretty much pick his position when the next round of sackings come.
Yeah, definitely. He might have a look through the leagues and see other positions that might come available soon. But I think the fans are desperate for him to stay. They've said whoever they get in, he's got to be number two at the very least. And like I say, they sang his name at the weekend, and they're loving this revival.
Can't fault him, really. Played 3-1-3, two in the league. Played a nice, positive style of football. He's got the team passing it. He's got them pressing, he's got them running around, they're actually looking like they care.
At the moment, his track record's proving well, so he's making some good decisions on the pitch, so you can't really argue at the moment. He's doing a pretty good job.
Richie's got the knowledge of the club, he's got the knowledge of the leagues as well. It's strange to think, really, when you look at it, it's virtually the same team.
All right, well, as I say, they are away at Bradford tonight. They will be home again before too long. Matt, if I wanted to go and see Oldham, what would I have to do?
Well, you could drive if... You take the car, it's pretty easy to get there. You come off the M62 at Junction 20, take the A627, it's very well signposted.
Your instructions are always so detailed, I like them.
Well, we want to make sure people actually reach the ground in time for kickoff here. There's actually loads of parking around the stadium as well. There's a gym in the new stand. So I think if you get a membership, you're allowed to park on the club car park. Because,
really?
Yeah, I was asked when I pulled up the other day, they were like, oh, are you a gym member? And I was like, yes. And also, actually, I think I could see people on the treadmill watching the game from where I was sitting in the other stand.
Nice.
So that might be the way to sneak into Oldham. Not sure if we're supposed to say that. You can also take the Metrolink from Manchester City Centre to Westwood Stop, and it's a 15-minute walk. Tickets, adults are £20 and under-16s for £10.
That was very thorough. Thank you very much. Matt, when we come back after the break, it's the Championship and it's Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Gentlemen, are you feeling a bit crap? Well, you're not alone. Everyone does at some point. But the thing people don't realise is just how common it is in chaps like you and me. Last year, 76% of all the suicides in Britain were male. That's 4,287 men, a figure not much smaller than the average League Two attendance last season. On average, 12 men take their own life every single day, meaning that the leading cause of death for men under 45 in the UK is suicide. Scary, huh? But that's part of the problem. There's still a strong social stigma around depression and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and seeking help when they need it. That's why we at the Totally Football Shows are working with Calm. They're the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide in the UK. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, they provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. They've also got a website and a free magazine packed with the kind of information you need if you or any of your mates are having a rough time, as well as some cracking stuff on comedy, bands, film, and of course football too. So if you are feeling crap, find Calm at thecalmzone.net for support and some straight-up manspiration.
It's time for the Championship. We'll talk more about Wolves' 2-0 win in a moment, but blimey, even Steve Bruce had to admit that Villa were beaten by the better side there. The Wolves have opened up a 2-point lead on Cardiff, who were beaten by Birmingham in Steve Cotterill's first game in charge. Cardiff didn't have a single shot on target. Meanwhile, Sheffield United continue to impress. They beat Ipswich 1-0 in front of nearly 26,000 people, and they are third.
Britta Sombalonga rescued a 2-2 draw for Middlesbrough at Barnsley, but Gary Monk's side are now four games without a win in the Championship. And Bolton picked up their first victory of the season at the 12th time of asking, a fine strike from Sammy Amiobi sending them on their way to a 2-1 win over Sheffield Wednesday. There was a controversial finish to Brentford's 1-0 win over Millwall, with ref Lee Probert awarding a penalty for the visitors, despite Lee Gregory slotting the ball home after Jed Wallace had been fouled. Gregory stepped up to take the spot kick, but it was brilliantly saved by Daniel Bentley.
Sunderland drew 1-1 with QPR. They're unbeaten in two. And they're still second bottom, 3 points adrift and without a league win since August the 13th. But hey-ho, let's be positive. Bristol City's impressive surge, that was slowed by Burton Albion. Those two drew 0-0. And in the big game on Sunday, Derby County came through our show's curse and they put Nottingham Forest to the sword. Big 2-0 win for Gary Rowett.
Preston threw away a 2-0 lead at Fulham as goalkeeper Chris Maxwell dropped a late cross to hand Dennis Adoy a 96th minute equaliser. And what do we know? Reading picked up an impressive 1-0 win at Leeds thanks to Modu Barrow's strike and a stoppage time penalty save from Vito Minoni. There was also late drama at Norwich, Nelson Oliveira flicking the ball home in the 96th minute to salvage a 1-1 draw against 10-man Hull.
Lovely stuff. Right, we don't usually do the plotted history for the Championship clubs because kind of assume you know all about them anyway. But I always think it's worth remembering that Wolves were the original post-war dynastic superpower. They dominated the 1950s. They beat the mighty Honved, and it was only a little bit because Ron Atkinson and the rest of the Wolves ground staff flooded the pitch. For Wolves to have gone from that level to the fourth division in about 30 years, very nearly out of the Football League entirely, I mean, imagine Liverpool being down there scrapping it out with Chesterfield and Port Vale today, and that's where it is. But for the first time since those days of Stan Cullis, there's a chance they could be a really, really good side again. Because, Matt, it's all changed, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all changed. They've got new investment from Fosun, their Chinese backers. They've got Jorge Mendes involved, who's done an interesting job at bringing in players from all over Iberia. And some of those signings have been absolutely brilliant. And the way they're playing at the moment, they were completely outclassed Villa at the weekend.
Do you know why Wolverhampton's famous? Famous first for Wolverhampton?
Floodlights.
Oh, close. First club to really make use of them, but I think it was Arsenal at first with floodlights. Okay. Very close because they were the first town in Britain to introduce automated traffic lights in 1927.
How do you really make use of floodlights? What's not making use of them?
Well, they just turning them on. No, Wolves started having big exhibition games, which was where the game with Honved, who were the bulk of the great Hungarian side, came over. And it was everyone in football, George Best, Gordon Banks, they're all kids watching it. And it's generally regarded to have led to the formation of the European Cup vis-à-vis the Champions League. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. There was a misstep in Fosun International's start, wasn't there? Because they hired Walter Zenger, and that didn't really work out.
No, it wasn't a great appointment. Actually, he's been linked with Oldham as well, with the new investment that's going on there. So we might get return for him to English football. No, he's had quite a checker career really as a manager, hasn't he? He's been everywhere and never really settled too well. Yes, but I think they've made a good appointment now. Clearly, Nuno Santo, what a great record he had at Valencia in Spain. He took them to fourth in La Liga in his first season there, and he ended up quitting a few months into the second season in November after a pretty mixed start, but not too bad. And that was when the Gary Neville experiment started, obviously.
Gary Neville's predecessor, Jorge Mendes, his first ever client. And Jose Mourinho's backup goalkeeper at Porto. I'll be honest, I have my doubts. Matt, you must have had your doubts after what happened at Blackburn Rovers. But there seems to be a difference between the Blackburn Rovers fiasco and this, in that Jorge Mendes is actually bringing in really good players.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to get an agent to help with your transfer business, then you know, make sure you get the very best. And Jorge Mendes, the players that he's brought in so far, I think they've broken their transfer record in the last three windows running. They signed Avan Cavaleiro, who's still in the first team, played well again at the weekend, held a cost to what a player he is, signed on loan initially, and then they made that permanent last January. Ruben Neves, who's doing brilliantly in midfield, captain Porto as an 18-year-old in the Champions League, and then the star of this season, Diogo Jota, who's on loan from Atletico Madrid, and Wolves have an option to buy, and it looks again like they're going to smash a transfer window in January to make that permanent deal.
Gregor, have you seen much of him this season?
Yeah, I did a feature pre-season. I went to the they played Leicester in the last pre-season game, and they played Leicester off the park. I mean, they do look the real deal. And I think what was interesting was there's been a lot of scrutiny of Mendes, obviously, and his involvement. But you go and you speak to any Wolves fan, and they don't care.
they want
success. They see the players coming in, they think, if this is going to get us in the Premier League, this is modern football, we'll take this, thank you very much. And they've put together a fantastic team.
But we should just say that it's not just flash players, is it? I mean, we had Chris Powell in here last week, was talking about here Connor Cody at Huddersfield, and couldn't have seen him being the central defender he is. Matt, who else is there who sort of represents the steel to the newly imported silk?
Yeah, they seem to have built a defence on a lot of players that have experience in the Football League. Danny Barth has come back into the side in that three-man defence there. And yeah, they have Matt Doherty, who's done well this season, down the right wing-back position. I was going to ask Gregor, actually, are you impressed with how quickly they've switched that 3-4-3 formation? Because apparently the first day of pre-season, Nuno Santo goes into the training ground and says, this is how we're going to play this season. And they're playing brilliantly in that shape already. And a lot of players might not be familiar with it. Cody, obviously, Powell said last week he never saw him dropping back and playing that sweeper position.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he deserves huge credit, because they've kind of drawn together this disparate group of players from all over the world, really. Huge. You'd think there might be some big egos, big price tags. And he's created an organised, solid unit. That's the first thing people say about Wolves at the moment. They look hard to beat. And that all stems from work on the training ground, and I think Nuno deserves great credit for that. Yeah,
I'll tell you who else he's brought in who I liked, and you'd never catch me saying this near a TV at Christmas, but I really like Miranda. He's been fantastic. He played for Nuno at the Portuguese club that I'm scared to say because I'll never say it right.
Rio Ave.
That would do. I was going to go for Real Ave.
He's good on the ball, isn't he? He played some great passes the other day against Villa. Forward passes, into Hotter's feet, and
aye. I like the boy Vinegar as well. He's decent. What next for Wolves? More money to be spent in January?
Absolutely. That's what I've heard. I think Hotter, obviously, they want to get that transfer tied up. And they've only got Leo Bonatini, really, as the only senior striker at the moment. He's on loan from Al Hilal. He actually hasn't started the last couple of games. He's played more of a fluid front three, with Costa coming back to fitness and alongside Cavaliero and Hotter. But Bonatini came on at half-time at the weekend, did really well in that second half, scored, obviously, the second goal. He's got 5 goals and 4 assists in 12 games so far, so he looks a really promising signing. But I think they do want another centre-forward to provide some competition in that area. They went for Jordan Hugill in the summer, and Preston obviously rejected their offers then, and it's unlikely, with Preston being in the playoff spots, that they're going to be interested in selling him at this stage. But I think a centre-forward is definitely the prime target for Wolves.
Well, they play Preston at the weekend, and given the absolute hiding they gave Aston Villa, I can't see Preston holding out. I'm going to go around the table, but I think I know the answer. Do you think Wolves will get automatic promotion?
Yes, I think they look the real deal. Every position they've got real quality and strength, and I think they'll be up there. Yeah,
Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll finish in the top 2 spots. They were so much better than Villa at the weekend.
Wolves fans will be screaming right now, given our reputation for invoking pain and misery. But I think you could throw that club in the Premier League and they'd stay up right now at this stage. I think they're that good. And if the money keeps coming and they keep signing the players that well, they could be absolutely fine.
Could be playing Honved again.
Yeah, who knows?
Just need Honved to
So that's Wolves, thoroughly hexed by the Totally Football League show. We are swiftly running out of time, but there is just a bit of time for the questions section. Ed Quoth the Raven, very good friend of the show, regular correspondent. He says, which of Chesterfield's crimes was the worst? The fake fan, Surrey Spyrite, who won the competition for a trip away, or the appointment of Dean Saunders as manager? Matt, which hurt the club more? We'll let Gregor off this one.
let's go for the fake fan, because I think we want to get Dean Saunders on the show at some point.
Yeah, I'll agree with that one.
Yeah, that did not go well. Tom Knight... he says, Northampton Town, are we going down? How do we fix it? It's so hard to watch. Have you seen much of Northampton?
Yes, I've seen a fair bit of them. I saw Jimmy Floyd's first game, and he seemed to have completely he'd organised them really well, and they looked like they were going to stop conceding goals, and then bang, left, right, and centre they're going in. It's surprising. He looked like he'd shored things up at the back there, but I think they're looking like they could be in trouble. I think they need January to come round as well and to find somebody who can score some goals.
Never recovered from letting that 2-goal lead slip at Southend. Sam Keenard, he says it'd be great to hear Gregor reminisce about his promotion season with Grimsby Town.
Ah, good days. Yeah, I mean, Wembley final, we lost the season before to Bristol Rovers, my penalty kick, which was very tough to take, and then the following season to go one better. That was a fantastic day. Yeah, that was my second last day of my career too. The last two games were both at Wembley. That's probably
first.
Yeah, so I'm not going to better this.
You're manager at Grimsby, of course. Manager at Shrewsbury now. Are you even faintly surprised by what's happening?
Well, yeah, you've got to be surprised, I think. But I'm not surprised he's doing well. But this well, yes. I went there the other week and they were so well organised, so fit, and he's a good manager. I think he's got a good future. There's nothing flashy about him. He draws together a group of players who there's no star on the team. There's no egos. He wants everyone to earn the same amount of money really as well. He doesn't want any sort of cause for any disruption in the dressing room at all. He wants a good team spirit. And he's honest and straightforward with the players, and training's enjoyable. I think he's got a good future, and I think Shrewsbury, everyone's waiting for them to drop now, to fall off, for it to go pop. But they look very hard to beat, and I think it's going to be hard for somebody to topple them.
Well, let's be honest, even if they do go pop and finish mid-table, that's still quite a massive step up from last season. They'd have taken that in August. Let's ask you about Scotland. It's been a strange...
Don't do that.
A strange couple of weeks, hasn't it? Gordon Strachan's comments on genetics.
Really? I'm 6 foot two, you know?
I was going to say, you bust the theory.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, he's spoken about this before, and you see his point if you look at the team, in that we've not really got many athletes in the team. But to bang on about the height just after going out was a big mistake. If you look at the players at his disposal, every manager for the last 20 years or so has struggled. It's not his fault. And I think it probably was time to try someone else, but I'm not sure who that someone else is going to be, actually.
Could it be Malky Mackay?
It could.
Should it be Malky Mackay?
That's a very different question, yes. I would say probably not. I think he's got a job as well. His job's got some serious purpose, I think. He's trying to look at how you can improve the standard of players who are coming out of our little proud country.
Because there is one man available. He's got a little bit of experience in international football. Is Scotland ready for Big Sam Allardyce?
I think they'd embrace Big Sam, yeah.
Yeah?
It's not going to happen, though.
Really?
Well, no, I don't think he'd do that. It's true, there's not... You look at who there is available, and there's not many. I mean, you're going back to a man who's on this show recently, Alex McLeish. He did well in his short time there, and he's been out of the game for a while, but he's had a good career. I think they could do worse. I think Paul Lambert has done well on the whole. I think he'd be a shout, but beyond that, there's nobody really there.
Okay, we'll let you off the rest of that.
Thank you.
our final question, which is in no way a thinly veiled attempt to gain more context for guests on the show. Who's your best friend in football?
Oh, God. I mean, I was good friends with Jack Lester, and I still am. I played with him at Forest and Chesterfield, and known him a long time. The goalkeeper there, Tommy Lee, I'm good friends with. Barry Roche, I know you were saying it like Roche, like Ferrero Rocher or something, but the Irishman.
I've got pronunciations far worse than that.
Yeah, I played with him at Forest as well, and there's a few, but I'd say those lads at Chesterfield, that was a good time there.
What do they make of you being a journalist now?
I think when I ring them now, they kind of go, "Oh God, what does he want now?" You know, I get some people. You get the odd joke about watch what you say around him now, but most of the time it's just a bit of a joke.
Well, we're very glad you didn't watch what you said around here. It's been wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Matt, thank you so much for coming in. This has been the Totally Football League Show. You can follow us on Twitter at The Totally Show. You can follow us on Facebook at The Totally Football Show. If you like the show, do give us a review or a star rating. They all count. They all really, really help. And we will see you next Tuesday.
The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email us at sales@muddyneesmedia.com.